Or you get an appointment, then you send them out something, then you go back and you make a formal presentation. But what that letter, what that proposal says has everything to do with it. Piece of minutia that'll give you guys about a 25 to a 300% improvement in your sales. Whatever business you're in, if you use catalogs or brochures, or are planning on using catalogs or brochures, raise your hand. Anytime you send a catalog or brochure out without a cover letter that is their advocate, its champion, you're losing about 50 to 80% of the impact. Did you know that? People say, send me a catalog or a brochure, and somebody will stick it in the envelope and send it out. The sales letter is the advocate. It makes the case. It enlivens. It animates. It transactionally shows the product or service at work in their life. It makes the case. The brochure is the amplification. If you don't understand that, you're going to lose torque. Those of you who haven't gotten started, it's going to be great. You haven't made the mistake. Those of you who are doing it wrong now, stop, because it'll add geometrically. If right now you send a brochure out, and you probably don't measure when you send 100 out how many convert, you probably don't have a system of following up, so you don't know what to do. But if you send it out, you're going to probably find it with adding the right letter to it, or any letter to it that's an advocate of the product or service at work, is going to increase your results. As I said, 30 to 300, 500%. It's really that powerful. So, okay, I was talking about maximizing what you're doing first. You can't maximize what you're doing until you know what they're doing. All the activities, all the opportunities, all the people, what each one's doing. Then you got to overlay it, see who's doing it better in your industry, and you got to go outside your industry, hopefully to lots of industries, and look at how they're doing it. And it doesn't necessarily mean literally the linear, generic process. It means the result the process is trying to get. In other words, you might see lead generating, because that's how you know it, as running silly little ads that don't say anything and getting people to clip them out and call, or doing bingo sheets. And those are lead generating, but I was in a business one time years ago that we were generating like 10 million leads every year, and we figured out that there's a couple key factors to lead generating. Quantity, quality, convertibility, residual value, acquisition cost. Until you know all five of those things, you don't have a clue what a good or bad lead is. But you might find that 18 other industries have figured out 10 times better ways to get leads. And one of the best ways is, instead of doing it in the outside market, they might just go to a quality organization or company that already has the market, get them to endorse you, or get them to let you ride with their salespeople, get them to let you have a kiosk in their operation. I mean, the smartest lead generating I ever saw back in the old days was Allstate and Sears. But I mean, there's a lot of alternatives that you never think of. I'm very nonlinear. I want to see all the different options, then I want to choose the highest performing one first to replace the underperforming one. But I might not want to replace it. I might want to keep it there if my underperforming one is still viable, because why throw the baby out with the bathwater? If this one is driving $2 million, but I can put next to it or with it or replace it or fortify it with one or two better ones that do the same thing, but it'll pull three or four times better, the combination is very powerful, and it's geometric, geometric, geometric. So the first thing you want to do is literally maximize what you're doing. Can't do that to figure out what the hell you're doing. Can't figure that out till you break it down to its process and sub-process. All this is driven by the same thing, borrowing the success processes from outside the industry or from outside your business, traveling outside your market. Think about it. How many here have ever traveled outside your city? Okay. How many have traveled outside your state, your country, this continent? Every time you went further, didn't you learn more? Didn't you see distinctions you never knew about? Different attitudes, moralities, topographies, lifestyles, religious, you know, beliefs, all kinds of things that broaden your understanding of what was possible. Broaden your paradigm. The same analogy applies to what you're doing in your current, your pre-revenue, your business plan based, or your glint in the eye business.
We'll continue with more powerful mastermind marketing strategies in the next session. Second cornerstone of my philosophy and my strategy is that after you've maximized what you're already doing, you then multiply your success by borrowing new success processes and adding them as new revenue streams, as new activities to what you're already doing. And again, the way you do that is by going outside your industry and borrowing success processes from all kinds of other companies. Because remember, a concept that's common as dirt that everybody else in Industry A does, but Industry B's never thought about or used, can have the impact, the power, the profitability, and the preemptive effect, meaning it will make you stand out as superior. It will differentiate, and it will basically competitively protect and preserve your leadership, or it will loft you and catapult you to leadership very quickly if you are the first or the only one to borrow and apply it in an industry that's never been seen before. That's what your goal is. So first thing, multiply what you're already doing, getting rid of the stuff that's toxic, ineffectual, underperforming, suboptimal, replacing it with far higher performing options and opportunities that you can only know of when you go outside and evaluate and compare, and then basically commit to highest and best use. Second, multiply your successes by bringing new profit centers, new approaches, new revenue streams, new activities into bear, but you don't do that until you first solidify what you're already doing. Third concept, you replace the mindset and the philosophy you have been using in your business with a new one, a new philosophical strategy that I call the strategy of preeminence. And I call it that because it makes you, it makes everyone in your organization, it makes you in the marketplace come across to all the people you'll ever interact with, prospects, clients, colleagues, community, as being preeminent, as being the definitive, the only viable choice that is out there. And again, a key distinction. It used to be years ago, before the advent of internet and a savvy, very well educated, demanding consumer, that all you had to do was have a unique advantage over your competitor and you would own the world. I taught that for many years, and anyone who's listened to my previous material know that that's what I used to say. All you need to do is have a unique selling advantage that was superior to your competitor and you own the world. That's not enough anymore. Today, you've got to be able to articulate the payoff proposition, the advantage, the benefit, your ability to fulfill, to provide, to render the benefit, the advantage, the outcome, the protection, the enjoyment that the intended customer or client is looking for in such a way that they see you as the only viable choice or solution they have. You've got to be able to be seen not only as the best one against all the people that are out there in your industry, but a better one than the decision of doing nothing, a better one than all the other alternative ways they have of filling the need. And a very important distinction that has come to be the norm, not the exception, thanks to the global economy and the internet, is now today the consumer may have one need they're trying to fill, but they've got an infinite number of choices now to try to fill it. So you've got to be very mindful of that when you're working on this concept that I'm introducing of the strategy of preeminence. And what it is, very simply, is an entirely new way of thinking and of viewing your relationship with your client. It starts very literally by defining and dissecting this concept of client. You will notice that frequently throughout the beginning parts of this session, I constantly use the word client instead of customer. I do allude to customer because a lot of you listen and think in terms of this relationship with the person I'm selling to. They are my customer. I would like from today forward, from this moment forward, for you to no longer ever, ever, ever again refer to the individual or the entity that buys from you and you have a commercial or a transactional relationship with as being a customer. From today forward, in your mind's eye, you need to think of them and preferably refer to them as a client. Why? For two reasons. First of all, because the strategy of preeminence demands that you move your relationship in your marketplaces and in your client's eye, not from one of just a vendor or a seller of products or services, but instead to attaining a position in their eye of being the preeminent advisor, their most trusted advisor, their most loyal and respected authoritative counsel in the area of expertise that you possess. You don't want to just be someone who renders a product or service. You want to be someone who can give them authoritative, well-reasoned, objective, expert advice on what to do, what not to do, what to buy, what not to buy. Towards that end, you want them to see you as a trusted advisor, almost as a fiduciary, like they see their relationship with their accountant or with their attorney or with their financial advisor or planner. not just as a seller of products or services. In order to attain a strategy preeminence, the first thing you have to do is stop seeing yourself as a commodity vendor and seeing yourself as a professional, as a trusted professional advisor who is arguably the most important connection they have in the area of your expertise to that knowledge base. Number two, you've got to start referring to them as clients and not as customers. Why? Do me a favor, just for your own edification, stop the tape in a minute and go get your Webster's Dictionary and look up the word customer and look up the word client. You'll see a decisive, a distinctive, a profoundly, dramatically gripping difference. A customer, Webster says, is nothing more than somebody who buys a commodity or service from somebody else. In a world that is trying to smack us down to commodity status, that is trying to marginalize everything we do, is trying to take all the profit away from us, is trying to strip us naked and de-differentiate us so we all are one homogenous same, so they can basically get everyone selling the same thing for the same price and the consumer can squeeze us out of every drop of profit, we've got to draw a line defiantly in the sand and say, I'm not going to play that game anymore. I'm going to be seen as the preeminent, proprietary, distinctively different entity in the whole field. And the way to do it is to see your relationship with buyers as clients, not customers. Why? Look up clients. Webster's defines that as somebody who's under the care and the protection of another. It is, in fact, the ultimate fiduciary relationship. You want to see yourself as the advisor. You want to be seen as this protector, advisor, caregiver, authoritative, trusted professional counsel. You do not want to be seen as just a random choice commodity vendor who they can basically buy something for here or anywhere else for about the same price with no value added, with no advantage, with no real benefit accruing to them other than maybe you happen to be the luck of the draw choice they walked into. You've got to set the difference right here and now. Another premise of the strategy preeminence is a very key distinction. Up until now, I suspect, just by the kind of person you are and the fact that you sought me out in my counsel, you're somebody who's always aspired towards higher levels of performance. You probably have a prejudice towards action. You probably have a commitment towards higher quality and contribution. And yet, I dare say you've probably been focused on the absolute wrong issue for almost the entirety of your business life to date. I suspect that you've probably fallen in love with either your product or your service or your company, and you've tried to get all your staff, all your employees, all your colleagues, all your team members to do the same. They love your company. They love your product. They love your service. Well, I have an embarrassing but a very liberating clarification for you to make right now, a very key distinction. Stop falling in love with your company. Stop falling in love with your product. Stop falling in love with your service. Even stop falling in love with your people. Start falling in love with your clients. Because when you do, the whole focus of your efforts, of your activities, of your purpose in being transforms from being self-directed to being externally directed. You will never again let your clients buy less than they should. You'll never again let them buy less things than they should. You will never again let them buy less often than they should. You will never again let them buy from other people, not because they're taking money out of your pocket, because they're taking opportunity, because they're taking performance, because they're taking success, because they're taking wealth creation, because they're taking joy or security out of their pocket by favoring somebody who doesn't extend themselves at the level your company will, who doesn't care at the level your company does, who doesn't contribute at the level your company does. Case in point, if you were with me in person or at one of my expensive training programs, very early in the session, I would bring out a glass of half-filled water, a clear glass that you'd have half-filled water in. And I'd say, pretend I am J. Abraham and I own J. Abraham's bottled water shop and water bar. And you walked in to buy a half a glass of water from me. If I enthusiastically and knowingly took your money, with knowing as I do that you need to get 7.5 additional glasses of water each and every day to ensure that your body performed well, that your brain chemistry worked, that you were operating at the least level of stress, at the highest level of mental acuity, that your cells were nourished, that your energy was robust, that your focus was acute, that your body performed well, that your elimination worked, that everything worked. If I just took your money because you wanted to buy only a half a glass of water without first trying to assure myself that you were clearly aware of all the reasons why you should be getting the 7.5 additional ones from me, or at least from someone else you trusted, and I didn't do everything in my power to make sure you knew about it, that I didn't do everything in my power to try to get you to buy the other 7.5 glasses for me, not for my economic benefit, but for your personal or physical and mental and performance and life benefit, I would be stealing from you so massively by taking your money without verbalizing my beliefs and advising you in what was in your best interest. Correspondingly, if you came every 2 days to me and bought 8 glasses, but I didn't make certain that you were getting the other 8 in between from somebody, or that you consciously were aware of its importance and did everything in my power to get you knowledgeable, to get you aware, and then to try to sell it to you, not because I wanted the sale for my own enrichment, but because I wanted the sale for your healthfulness, for your performance enhancement, for your success, I would be stealing from you there too. You need to adopt, if you're going to follow a strategy of preeminence mindset, the same kind of a belief system. You can't allow someone to buy less than they should. You can't allow someone to buy less combinations than will give them the maximum performance or outcome or benefit or protection or enhancement or productivity or satisfaction or enjoyment or entertainment, depending on what you sell. You can't allow someone to buy less often than they should, or less quantity than they should, or less combination. You can't let them go to a competitor if that competitor is going to disserve them. Not because it's in your best interest, because it's in their best interest. Always remember that.
I'm here because I want to see each and every one of you make the absolute most of your opportunity, of your time, of your capital, because I want to see you give and contribute the absolute most you can to people so their lives will be enriched. So people can have more bountiful, more pleasurable, more prosperous, more joyous, less painful lives. You got to have that kind of wish. You got to have a hopefulness for your client that is so much more demonstrable, so much more dimensional, so much more animated, so much more clear and indelible in your heart that nobody could ever break through the bond you will create. When you do that, marketing becomes very, very easy because you no longer have to worry about what do I have to do or say to win over somebody. All you have to do is recognize the question, how much more value do I have to convey that they value and prize and recognize to the point they would never, ever, ever want to be without me? And you start focusing on adding more value. Value that is not defined by your terms, but is defined and appreciated solely by their terms. You develop what I call a you attitude, not meaning you, the vendor, but you, the recipient. All your thinking, all your thoughts, all your focus is on them, not on yourself. And you are blessedly and benevolently and enrichingly rewarded as a bonus for doing that by the loyal people who stay there. Another element in the strategy of preeminence, which is quite important, it's that you recognize the following. It used to be that your goal was to have, and I coined this years ago, unique selling proposition. It was what distinguished you amongst everybody else. If I sat down and asked each and every one of you in 1 minute or less, tell me exactly, measurably, definitively, why it is somebody should buy from you instead of him. What is it besides the fact that you want the money and need it? What do you have that he doesn't? And if you can't answer that, you're either lucky you have any business or you're dead and don't know it. I used to say, the model is, you know how when Federal Express first started, they said when it absolutely positively has to be there by 10 overnight, FedEx, and nobody else was doing that. You know how when Avis first started, they said, we're number two, so we have to do more, be more attentive, etc. You know how when Nordstrom's first started, they said, if you're dissatisfied with any purchase for any reason, any time, we'll give you your money back, we'll exchange it, give you credit, your choice. You know how when Domino's first came out, they said, hot, fresh, delicious pizza delivered to your door in 30 minutes or less, or it's yours free. That's a unique selling proposition. That alone is critically important because most companies in competitive business don't have anything that distinguishes them above and beyond the competition. And if they can figure out how to verbalize it, they don't live it. Even if they live it, they don't show it throughout their organization. So one function may be really clear on it and the rest aren't. You've got to transcend that if you want to practice the strategy of preeminence. You've got to realize today your job is to be seen by your market as the only viable solution to a problem or opportunity that you help them verbalize so dimensionally and so graphically and so clearly that you help them establish an epiphany. So it's so clear to them, you are the first person that verbalizes that you understand and feel what they feel. That you want for them what they want but have never verbalized. That you understand that you are the only entity in the sector who knows how to deliver the result. The product is static. The result is transactional. The result they are after. Does that make sense? First of all, you got to figure out what's the single biggest measurable self-serving advantage that you offer somebody that they would prize amongst everything else. That's the first way to look at it. Another one called it the elevator speech. If you're riding an elevator and you had only, you know, between floor 1 and floor 20 to explain what you did and get people so interested and intrigued in having it done for them. Not just, you know, I'm a marketing expert, but instead, like mine used to be, I can't remember it, I know how to take overlooked assets, hidden opportunities, underperforming activities, turn them into windfall profits, then turn them into ongoing steady streams of additional revenue. That was pretty powerful. You can have USPs for products, for markets, for businesses, marketplaces, for salespeople. It depends on what you're doing. You might have a direct mail approach that is, it's like some stores have an outlet. Well, like Nordstrom's Rack is a lot different than Nordstrom's, isn't it? Its USP is not, you know, the top-of-the-line quality things. It's sort of neat stuff that, you know, that got distressed or out of date, and you can get it for a song. It's a slightly different USP, isn't it? You're maximizing what you're doing. You're figuring out what you're doing first. You're bringing it down to its process and its sub-processes. You're traveling outside your marketplace. You're borrowing the success processes from other companies. You're practicing a strategy of preeminence, right? Right. Then, and only then, are you ready to multiply your opportunities by, again, traveling outside your field and seeing how many other revenue-generating activities, products, services, other companies in other fields have created that you can extrapolate over, that you can borrow, that you can adapt, that you can adopt. And it's a systematic, sequential process. Does that make sense? You do it again, following the success processes from outside your industry.
Another element of this, people who follow a strategy of preeminence belief system recognize that clients don't buy products or things. They buy the results, they buy the benefits, they buy the enhancements, they buy the performance, they buy the outcome, they buy the improved life, the improved productivity that your products or services transactionally at work in their life or in their business provide them with. With that stated, realize one very, very, very wonderful and liberating additional point. Most people come to me and say, Jay, what do I have to do or say to get people to buy more for me, to get more people to buy? What do I have to say? What phrase? What this? What that? And I said, it's not that difficult. The focus of the question is wrong. The question should be, how much more value, education, service, and benefit that is appreciated and recognized by that client do you have to render until there's so much they can't possibly say anything but, yes, sign me up. Here's my check. Here's my purchase order. Here's my credit card. What people crave more than anything else is information, education, and knowledge that they can act upon. The more value that they respect, not you, because your idea of value and theirs may be decisively different. A case in point, when I'm trying to get people to focus on what satisfaction looks like in their client's eyes, not in their own, I make points to them that what you may think of as being a great benefit, a great feature, a great advantage, your client may discount totally because in their life it has no meaning. You may be excited about something. You may find that craftsmanship is so great, but because it doesn't really have a performance advantage or a benefit or an appreciation in your client's eyes, it has no benefit. You've got to constantly focus on this, the me attitude, me being the client. All the client cares about is what's in it for me. They don't care about you. That's not a negative. It's a great positive. Just like you don't care about me. You don't care why I'm doing this tape set. You don't care of why I'm in the studio extending myself arduously for hours and hours, redoing this so it'll be clear, reforming it so you'll get the greatest examples possible, redenominating it so it'll be so alive and so clear and so actionable to you. All you care about is this session, this course, this program sure as heck better give you the breakthroughs that are promised or you're not going to keep it. Your client is no different. That's the advantage of addressing and embracing and applying a strategy of preeminence mindset. The fourth cornerstone to my philosophy of how you grow a business geometrically, how you maximize your success, your revenue, your profit, your wealth, is that you never again allow yourself to grow your business incrementally. You always work on the two key elements that will maximize and absolutely assure geometric growth. What are they? One is called the three-way to grow a business model. The other is called the power Parthenon of geometric business growth. And we'll be talking a lot about this in depth over the next few sessions. So fasten your seatbelt and get ready for quite an adventure. So there you have it. Four very simple cornerstones that are the real secret to producing, engineering, and sustaining continual, dramatic, and wonderful geometric business growth, no matter where you are in the business continuum. Whether you're a mature company, whether you're a massive company, whether you're a startup company, whether you're a one-person enterprise, whether you're a professional in private practice, whatever, the methods and the philosophy and the strategy I've just outlined are going to be the basic foundation we're going to use over the next few sessions to build for you a geometric growth strategy that will be truthfully impossible to stop. From today forward, you'll never again allow anything to ever underperform in your life. You'll never accept less success, less profitability, less impact, less clients, less sales, less repeat sales, and less impact from anything and everyone that you actually do anything with. So now I'd like to basically prepare you for the next sessions. We're going to now take apart some of the elements that I've talked about in its general sense here, and we're going to concentrate and get deep on each element that I think is critical for you to learn, to apply, and to systematically integrate into your success strategy. Speaking of strategy, 99% of the people in business I look at operate their business tactically, not strategically. Tactically means it's just a mechanism to get to a short-term outcome. It's what you do to pay the rent, to make payroll, to be sure that you can draw a check for yourself at the end of the month. That's tactical. That's just an activity that's going to get you from point A to point B. Strategy is the big overriding theme. It's the master plan behind the entire effort you're mounting. It's what you're trying to see your business become, where you're trying to see it take it, how you're trying to distinctively position it, how you're trying to differentiate it, how you're trying to really build it to be seen as the preeminent leader in the field. Without a master strategy, all you can ever hope for are, again, incremental linear gains. The biggest, easiest, fastest way any company I've ever worked with in my life, and again, I've singly worked with 10,000, I've in group worked with over 200,000, the fastest, easiest, most no-brainer way you've got available to you to transform your results overnight is to change strategy. Until you change strategy, you won't change results. Doing a lot more of the same thing is only going to give you, at best, incremental gain, and it's going to give you, at worst, a lot of wasteful effort, expense, and lost opportunity. Change strategy, you change results. Change strategy, you produce geometric gains. Change strategy, you give yourself infinite upside leverage. That, my friend, that, my dear business owner, entrepreneur, professional, is what we're going to now explore in the upcoming sessions. Let me ask you a trick question. I'm letting you in on the fact that there's a trick answer here too. It's one that you're going to love. How many ways do you think you have available to you right now to grow your business? 50? 150? 500? 1,000? Think it's daunting? Well, have I got news for you. There are only three main ways you need to focus on to grow any enterprise to any level you want. Just three. Not 103, not 1,003, three. You want to know what they are? Number one, increase the number of clients. Number two, increase the size of the transaction, size of the sale you make. Number three, increase the frequency of transaction, how many times they come back and repurchase, or how many more ways you got to sell them other things and products and services. Those three ways alone will give your business more geometric growth if you apply all three at the same time in a combined effect. Let me explain. Most businesses out there, when they struggle with how to grow their enterprise, focus almost exclusively on the first category, increasing the size of their clients. And again, they think in customers because they're nothing more than commodities, unlike you. They're not preeminent. They're not distinctive. They're not owning their market. They're just trying to get by and make it to next payroll next day. All they normally focus on, and all perhaps you've previously focused on, is how can I grow more clients? Well, let me tell you this. There's nothing wrong with that except it's the slowest, the most expensive, the least effective, the most time-consuming, the most ineffectual option you've got in the three ways. It takes an enormous amount of effort to deploy another salesperson. It takes an enormous amount of effort to convince somebody to buy from you the first time. Once they've decided to buy, however, it's not terribly hard to convince them to buy more at the point of sale. If they've had a good experience and they've gotten an outcome that you define for them and they're getting a benefit and a performance from your product or service at work in their life, guess what? It's not very hard to get them to come back and buy more often. Now, an important point. Most companies, when trying to grow their business, only concentrate on, hey, let's go out and try to grow more clients. We need them, more customers. We need them. At most, all that will do for you is grow your business incrementally because it's slow, it's arduous, it has no geometry attached to it. However, if at the same time you're trying to grow more clients, if at the same time you're trying to grow yourself a large unit of sale, and if at the same time you're trying to get the clients you bring in and you have established in your current existing ones buying more things more often, guess what? That brings to bear this wonderful, powerful process of compound geometry. Let me demonstrate. I use a very simple reference model. Presume I've got a company, ABC Corporation, and that company has currently 1,000 active clients it's dealing with, 1,000 of them. Let's say that those clients, when they buy from them, on average, buy a $100 unit of sale. And let's say on average, every year, those clients buy two times. So 1,000 clients are buying $100 two times a year. So what's ABC Corporation doing in volume and revenue? 1,000 times 100 times 2. They're doing $200,000 a year in revenue. Now, let's say that you are now, as you are, a J. Abraham devotee. You are going to basically practice the business philosophy of geometric growth at all times. You are going to be adhering to this philosophy. You're going to be living the life of the strategy of preeminence. You are going to adhere to the philosophy of optimization, the highest and best use of your efforts, your time, etc. Well, guess what? If you only resign right now that you were going to get yourself a mere 10% increase, not just in one category, but across the board in all three categories, the results would be profound. Let me demonstrate and let me prove it. And let me also uncover for you a realization you probably never thought about. Let's start with the first category, the number of clients that you deal with. In my model, in my reference example, ABC Corporation, we had 1,000, remember? Okay. Well, those 1,000 clients came about by the normal, historic, previous ways ABC Corporation had done customer generation. And remember I told you that almost every company that I've ever seen does pretty much plus or minus about 20% the same thing everybody else in their industry does? Normally, whatever single and predominant mode of revenue generation, of customer creation that everybody else in an industry follows, you follow too. ABC Corporation was no exception. Whatever method everybody else in their business followed, that's the method that they followed. They didn't really explore all the alternatives. They didn't explore superior performing methods they could borrow from other industries. They didn't explore anything else. They just did one thing really mediocre. All you have to do to improve the effectiveness of client generation is any of a number of things. For example, most companies don't even know what their attrition rate is. Do you? Do you even know what attrition means? It means the number or percentage of previously active buying clients that now have become inactive. They've become dormant. They've stopped transacting business with you. Until and unless you know what that level or percentage or number is, you can't possibly move to reduce or eliminate it, can you? And yet, if all you did was know, for example, let's say that 20% of your clients became inactive every year, if you just put into effect a program to reduce or eliminate attrition or inactivity by 50%, that's like giving yourself a 50% increase in clients. That one simple step. Let me walk it through. With your 1,000 existing client example, if right now you keep adding new clients, but you keep losing them out the back door because you don't know what your attrition rate is, and even if you did know, you don't have in place a single system to try to eliminate or control it, you're losing 20%, my example, every year. So you're bringing in, you start with 1,000, you lose 200, you got to bring another 200 in just to break even every year. So to have any growth, you got to bring more than 200 just to have a little bit of incremental growth. Yet, if you recognize, hey, we've got 20% attrition or inactivity, and all you did was put in place a single system or multiple systems to reduce, not eliminate, but to reduce it by 50%, and you cut 200 down to 100, guess what? If you've been adding 300 a year, but you've only been growing by 100 customers because you've been replacing the 200 every year, all of a sudden, no greater performance on that end has a doubling effect in new customers. You start adding 200 new customers, not 100, because you're not losing 200 out of the back door. Does that make sense? One little example. Second example, let me ask you this question. How many of your sales staff and how many of the people in your organization that have direct contact with your clients have been formally and systematically trained in consultative advisory selling? That means you've either brought a trainer out, you've taken them to a seminar, you've bought a tape set from somebody like Nightingale Conant, you bought them a book that you had them read on the job or at home, and you've tested them, and they've been systematically and professionally trained, either in person or vicariously, by tape or by book, in consultative advisory selling. My guess is very few, if any. And yet, of all the high leverage points, of all the instantaneous increases and improvements you could give to your performance, getting everybody in your organization that has any contact with the public, not just the salespeople, but the receptionists, the accounts receivable and payable people, the buyers, the customer service, the delivery people, all conscientiously trained in consultative advisory selling, that alone has got a proven dramatic impact of increasing results in your company by almost a guaranteed 10 to 300% instantaneously. Let me state it differently. If you get everybody in your company who has any dealings with the public trained tomorrow in consultative selling, you close the doors, you turn off the phones, you let them listen to a 6-tape course that Nightingale Conant has of Brian Tracy or Tony Robbins or somebody like that, and you do nothing more than that. That 1 6-hour investment of time and a few dollars of money will guarantee to produce for you a 10 to 300% sustaining improvement in the area of bringing in more clients. 10% to 300% and sometimes more just for that one effort. And yet most people even know to do that. I'm trying to point out to you that you have available right now no less than about 50 different ways to improve the quantity of clients your company generates. And yet you've probably never thought about breaking it into all the different elements out there. How else do you generate clients? Well, let me count some of the ways. First of all, the process you use to target them. You probably don't use the most effective, the most optimal, because you never thought about it. You never isolated that everything can be broken down to a key performance process. And as a process, it can be either replaced, it can be measured, it can be quantified, it can be dramatically and continuously improved. And dramatic and continuous compound improvement is the key secret, the fundamental element that drives your ability, my ability to help you engineer and sustain continuous geometric business growth for your enterprise. So without getting real deep here, the point of reference is with the littlest of effort. If Jay Abraham were in your life and I spent a little bit of time with you, it's a no-brainer to get your performance in the area of client generation increased. Frankly, 2, 3, 4, 5, 8% or more, because I've done that over and over again when I've worked privately with clients. But will you concede to me that it's going to be a no-brainer for me to get you at least a 10% increase in that category? Remember, our goal here was to see if we can get 10% more clients by doing one or a multiple number of things that you weren't doing now, or getting the things you're doing now to perform better. Remember, highest and best use, barring the superior performing options and opportunities from other fields of endeavors and replacing or adding them to what you're currently doing. Make it exciting. Let me run you through a few ways you've got available right this moment in your business to increase the number of clients you've got. You can, number one, establish a formal referral system. Let me ask you this question. How much of your current business comes right now from either referrals or from word of mouth? If you're a quality company rendering a quality product or service, really caring about your client, even if you do everything else wrong and don't do anything that Jay Abraham would have recommended up till now, I guarantee you're getting 10 to 100% of your business from referrals or word of mouth. Whatever the size of your business, 10 to 100% is a lot. It can be thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars you're getting sort of ad hoc from people who just have a good enough experience, like you enough, respect you enough, really enjoy your product or service at work in their life or their business. They're telling other people. And yet, I bet you don't have in place even one formalized, systematized referral generating system that is operating all the time. Every time a transaction occurs, that system goes into play. You either say something to them, or something happens, or something is given to them or sent to them, designed to stimulate continuously, perpetually, and consistently each and every client that you do business with, telling at least 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 102 or 3 or 4 or 5 other clients to come and see you, to reach out and talk to you or visit you or call you or get you to evaluate their situation. And yet, if you just had one formalized system in place, that not just you, but every one of your salespeople, every one of your client contact people, every one of your customer service people, every one of your distribution people, every one of your delivery people, every one of your repair people, all utilized and followed, guess what? You'd be getting 2 to 10 referrals a year from every transaction you did with that client. 2 to 10 referrals times, in our example, 1,000 clients is 2,000 to 10,000 more referrals. Now, granted, everyone wouldn't buy, but everyone wouldn't also walk away. Somewhere between 1,000 and 10,000 more purchases and clients would emanate just from one formalized referral system in place right now. And yet, I've had the good fortune of studying 10,000 operating businesses representing 400 diverse industries. And guess what? I've identified 93 unduplicated referral generating systems that exist in the country and the world in business today, most of which you've never even thought about, let alone apply. Now, you may not be able to use all 93 at one time in your business, but I'll tell you what, if you're using not one of them today and just borrowed 4 or 5 of the systems that I've identified and applied them on a continual, formalized, systematic manner, ongoing in your enterprise, guess what? It would double or triple or realistically 10 times over increase the number of clients that would flow to you almost automatically and almost unstoppingly. If you're interested, at the end of this tape set, we'll tell you you can get all 93 of them in an organized, systematic program to make it a no-brainer for you to apply as many and in as many combinations as you like. But I've had a number of clients which, believe it or not, once they adopted and started living the strategy of preeminence, actually started making referral generation a condition of doing business with their company. You want to do business with me? You got to generate for me and refer at least 2 more quality companies or individuals of your same caliber in order for me to work with you. Now, that sounds callous and it sounds arrogant and brash. They would explain it in a much more nurturous way. Let me give you an example. They would say something to this effect. Mr. Prospective Client, I have 2 choices in my business life. I could spend all of my time out there marketing and selling and advertising and spending all my time and my money trying to bring new people in the door and keep them. Or I could spend all my time and all my capital on research, on development, on more investment in client services and client benefits and all kinds of value adds that make a much greater payoff possible for you. I've chosen that if rather than spending $1 million or $100,000 a year on ads that don't always work and on sales efforts that are futile and long enduring, I'd rather spend that same amount of money in giving you a greater benefit and giving you better pricing and giving you greater advantages and giving you a greater benefits and bonuses in the transaction. But in order to do that, I've got to compensate for the fact that I'm no longer spending all this time and effort in advertising or sales efforts. So guess what? I ask the clients that want to do business with me, because they obviously appreciate the value added, they obviously appreciate the benefits I give them, to refer to me two or more quality individuals or businesses of their same caliber, only if, when, and after we've delivered the benefit, the payoff, the outcome they expect. If they keep doing that, we keep doing business with them. If they can't, they have two choices. Number one, they don't have to do business with us. Or number one, we charge them a premium because I got to spend more money to replace the clients they didn't generate for me. Referral generating is probably the most immediate, the highest leverage, the most powerful option and action you've got available to increase the number of clients you've got. I'm going to give you the rest of the list, at least a beginning first stage list of some of the many dozens, if not hundreds of options out there. But realize this, referral generating can be done instantly. A referral-generated client negotiates the least, buys the most, is the loyalist to deal with, buys the most often, refers the most people, costs you the least to acquire, is the most enjoyable to deal with. Why in the world would you want to spend all your time and your money on all kinds of other activities first if within the realm of your existing, satisfied, loyal, joyously enjoyable. Remember, now that you're a strategy of preeminence follower, you've fallen in love with these people anyhow. You love them. Who do you think they hang out with? Wretches and swines, or more high quality people just like them that would be equally as pleasurable, equally as profitable, equally as joyous to work with? So you owe it to yourself. You owe it to them. You owe it to your business to get your satisfied, loving clients to refer continuously far more people like them to you, because that's the greatest way to grow your business the way you want it, with the most qualitative array of wonderful clients that'll keep growing and referring and growing and referring. And that is another method of growing your business geometrically. By the way, I'm going to secretly layer upon layer about a dozen different geometric growth strategies into this. It's almost subliminal. And by the time we're done with the last session, you will have painlessly and rapidly learn so many different geometric growth strategies, it'll blow your mind. Just want to stimulate your mind with the awareness that there are so many additional and more powerful ways you have available right now, this very moment, in your specific enterprise to grow the number of clients. And all you got to do is first recognize them, secondly, evaluate them and figure which ones work best and superior for you, and third, implement them. It's that easy. Here's some more. Acquiring clients at a break-even up front and making the profit at the end. Most people don't realize it. If you have a quality product or service that has either repeat purchases or brings people in and they buy other products or services from you, or you could sell them other products and services that are related to the area that they buy your product or service for, you owe it to yourself to start the buying relationship as quickly as possible. There's a phrase that's called lowering the hurdle. Lowering the barrier of entry, making it easier to say yes than to think about it or say no. A lot of times, the easiest way to do that is to lower the price in the beginning, or to use some of the profit you would normally take for yourself and invest it in adding bonuses, adding additional products or services to the package without increasing the price, to make it appealing and irresistible, because your goal is to make it easy to get started. Companies that will be easy to refer to that do this, the book clubs, they know that the soonest you get started, the faster you're going to basically start buying over and over again at full price, so that you buy 8 records for 2 cents or 4 books for a dollar. They don't care about getting started. They care about sustaining the relationship. Look at your business. If your business is one that once somebody starts buying, they keep buying over and over and over again on their own without even me getting into your life now and helping you improve and increase your methods and mechanisms for increasing purchases. If on their own they buy over and over again, you want to get them started right away. The sooner they get started, even if you don't make a lot of profit up front, the sooner they come back and buy over and over again. Now I'm going to introduce to you real quickly a concept which is very critical here, and that's what's called marginal net worth, or understanding what's called the lifetime value of a client. We're talking about these three ways to grow a business: how many people you've got, how much they buy when they purchase currently, how many times they buy from you over a period of time. Until and unless you look at your current business and you examine and you quantify and analyze those three figures, number of clients, active, and the attrition rate, number one. Number two, size of the average sale by category, meaning by type of product or by type of client. And number three, number of times they repurchase in a year and over what their predictable buying life is. You can't know how much you can afford to not spend but invest to bring more clients on board. Let me give you a great story about how I increased a business 600% in 6 months just by getting them to look at these numbers and then understand this concept of acquiring clients at a break even up front. I had a client one time that was in the fluid transmission business. They sold PVC pipe, plastic pipe that was used in manufacturing, in bottling, and in agriculture to transport fluid from one place to another. Chemicals, water to irrigate, syrup to mix colas, chemicals in the manufacturing process. They came to me wanting a breakthrough, and the first thing I said, okay, well, tell me what your lifetime value dynamics are. What are the numbers? What is the marginal net worth of a client? They didn't even know what it meant, let alone what their numbers were. And so I said, go back and tell me, on average, worst case. And by the way, when you're looking at this, you always want to think in terms of worst case, never best. Why? Because if you look at the worst case outcome, not the best, you will always be pleasantly surprised. You will never be devastated by being too optimistic or too zealous. So I said, at worst case, not best, when you bring a new client on board, what do they spend with you? Not best case, but worst case. And they looked, and they had never looked before. I said, worst case, when somebody buys, how many times a year will they come back and buy from you? Worst case, how much will they spend each time they come back? And finally, worst case, in their usable life, how long will they stay an active client? A year or two, three, 10? They never looked at that. So I sent them off to do that. I also asked them, what are you paying right now to your sales force? They had 6 salespeople in the field working in designated territories, calling on manufacturers, bottlers, farmers. They were paying their salespeople 10% of profit on every sale that they did. They came back to me after 3 weeks working the formula that I gave them and analyzing what the marginal net worth or lifetime value of their clients were, and here's what they found out. Worst case, not best. Every time they brought a new client on board, first time, that client bought $200 worth of profit on average. That client, worst case, not best, bought back from them on average, conservatively speaking, 5 times a year, and worst case, on average, every new client that bought the first time stayed with them for 3 full years. Now, they didn't all stay. Some only stayed for 6 months, but some stayed for 20 years, and they figured worst case, on average, every new client coming on board was worth to them 3 years of purchases, 5 purchases a year, $200 a purchase a year, or $3,000 worth of combined profit just to get a new client in the front door. They were paying their salespeople 10% of commission. I said to them, this is easy. It's going to be no-brainer. I figured out the whole solution. They said, well, what is it? I said, all you got to do is tell your salespeople that as long as they keep performing at the level they have been with their existing clients, meaning if their existing territory has been generating $50,000 a month in volume, as long as their monthly volume doesn't fall below that level from their existing clients, every time they bring a new client in for the first purchase, you will give them 100% of the profit. They started screaming because, remember, the profit on average they had identified was $200. They were paying the salesperson 10%. In the past, that would have meant a brand new client would have made the salesperson $20. I was suggesting they pay the salesperson $200 or $180 more. They were just livid. They said, you got to be crazy. Why should we spend or waste $180, we don't have to. And I said, it's not that. Because every time you invest $180 you never would have had, because this was clients you didn't have before, at one time, you're assuring yourself of getting 90% of the $2,800 in profit that will come from that one-time investment, from the repurchases and the lifetime value of those clients that will come in the future. I said, so an $180 one-time investment that cost you nothing because it's business you didn't have, and because now by giving the salesperson 10 times the commission, you're 10 times stimulating them to go out and open new accounts, you will make yourself 90% of $2,800 you never would have had in the future. I said, take it home and look at it. It's not smoke and mirrors. It's not tricks. They did that. They followed that. They applied that. It produced 600% increase in 6 months, and they're still using a variation of that formula today because they understood you could acquire clients at a break-even. And break-even to them meant they took the $180 that was normally reserved for their profit, and they invested it in more commission. That's not how you have to invest it. You can invest it in more products or services you add at the point of purchase as a bonus or a package. You can invest it in being able to spend more for advertising because you can accept less conversion because breaking even on the first sale is acceptable to you. You can invest it in more referral fees. It doesn't matter how you invest it. What matters is that you recognize that you can invest it because your goal is to get the purchase transaction started faster and easier so you can reap all the profit rewards in the future from the repurchases.
Most people in business don't have a clue. What I call the marginal net worth or lifetime value of a buyer or a client is in their life. Until and unless you know what a transaction is worth to you, worst case, in the first transaction, how many more transactions, worst case, you can expect to get from that kind of a buyer over a predictable period of time, what the revenue and the corresponding gross profits are that you make on all those transactions, you don't have a clue what you can afford to not spend, but to invest in the beginning and subsequently to attract, to convert, to sustain that buying relationship.
Another option you've got is guaranteeing purchases through risk reversal. This is a mind-blowing concept that almost nobody realizes. Let me give you the basis of it. Anytime any two people come together to transact business of any kind, tangible, intangible, financial business, fraternal business, romance, one side is always asking the other to assume more, most, all, more than all of the risk in the transaction. They may not even be consciously asking it, maybe implicitly, maybe unconsciously, but nevertheless, in any transaction, commercial or otherwise, not just money transactions, can be fraternal, trying to get friends, trying to find romance, trying to get your child to respect you. One side is always bearing much more of the risk in the transaction. And that risk isn't just singular. It could be the risk of looking bad. It could be the risk of having to spend a lot more money switching over procedures to follow and apply to some new product or service or manufacturing equipment you purchase. The point is there's all kinds of conscious or unconscious risk involved. Recognizing the risk factor in every transaction and eliminating it is the secret to great growth of new clients. And how you do it is take the risk away by various methods of risk reversal. You can do two things. Number one, denominate for the prospective client what performance satisfaction looks like in their life or business. In other words, helping them realize what it's going to be like in the future when they have your product or service at work performing, securing, protecting, enhancing, improving their efficiency, their productivity, their profitability, their joy, whatever the application of your product or service is. The more they can visualize that in the future, and the more you can stand behind that realization being a certainty by saying, we will guarantee that outcome, because if that outcome doesn't happen, then you can fill in the blank. We will take back the product, or we will adjust the price, or we will improve the performance, or we will keep servicing you until it does. The point is, the more you can eliminate the risk and guarantee the benefit or the result, the easier it is for people to take advantage and say yes. So in your business, you've got incredible upside leverage by working on better risk reversal. And you might say, well, Jay, we guarantee satisfaction. What more can we do? And I would say to you, a lot more. For example, saying satisfaction guaranteed is one thing. Saying, let me tell you exactly what's going to happen when you buy this product and you've got it working in your business. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. This is going to happen. Your life's going to be improved. You're going to start saving time. You're going to save money. You're going to see an improvement in this, an improvement in that within 6 months or less, or we'll take the product back, is about 100 times more powerful. Now, there are a lot of different ways to do risk reversal. But for right now, all you've got to think about is that you can improve dramatically the number of people that say, yes, sign me up. Yes, here's my check, cash, credit card, or purchase order, just by working on risk reversal.
One of the key areas, one of the things you have to realize about doing business, or about actually any kind of transaction, anytime two people come together